I was born ready, Jack. I just wanted to get this little nubble thing out of the hat because she's chewed the fucking I need something. I need like a fork or something. Get rid of it. Anyway, she's chewed my hat that was on the couch.
So we mentioned last week that we have a foster dog, Willow, here with us. And
oh, she just jumped on Jimmy.
She initially, like when she first got here, she was very quiet and very shy. She's now eating the microphone. But in the last week, she has slowly, it's like.
Her name's Willow, but she's going to be.
It's like buying a secondhand car that, like, for the first week drove perfectly, and now things are starting to go wrong. Like, the muffler's fallen off. Like, the steering wheel doesn't turn to the left. Like, she started pooing in the lounge room, like, every 2 hours.
But, like, the first 7 days she was here.
Didn't do it at all.
Did, like.
Has just started doing
clockwork. Clockwork. Like, yeah. Morning wee and poo. Morning wee and poo. Night poo. And would wee, like. I had in the first week, we had 2 wees in the house and that was it. And nothing's really changed, but I don't even know, why in the last 3 days. And it's always on that same rug in front of the fireplace. So I feel like just like rolling that up or putting it outside and cleaning it and just taking that away, because if that smell is what's making her going, oh, this is where I poo now. Oh, what's that sound? Oh, it's the washing machine.
Why did you put the washing on just before
I put it on like half recording? An hour ago. No, I put it on ages ago. No one can hear it.
It's
mate, this is life. This is love. This is life that we're feeling.
Can we just make a mental note that from now on when we're about to record, we don't put any major appliances on there?
It's a 55-minute wash that was put on 35 minutes ago. It's going to be done in 10 minutes.
Yeah. It's a 55-minute wash that could have been done 2 minutes after we finished recording.
Well, I wanted to get going with my day. This is the life that we're living.
This is what happens when your wife takes speed 3 times a day.
I had a really bad sleep.
There's rushes of enthusiasm and then crashes. And
my ADD's been all over the place lately, and nothing's changed with my medication, and nothing else has really changed, but I have very much felt like I've been feeling like I have bursts of I've got it, here we go, like, you know, get like, once I have Ritalin, being in charge and like control and being able to do things, which is what Ritalin has been able to do for me for the last 5 years. But now I'm finding there's these huge gaps of like the Ritalin's not touching the sides, but I can't take more because you kind of really feel it. It's counterproductive if I took more. So I don't know. Yeah, something's different. Like I've been feeling like I'm searching, especially like when I'm working in that. I feel like I'm really searching to where's that? I'm trying to find that place of Ritalin. What do I call it? Like the Ritalin charge station, you know? And it's there sometimes, but I didn't sleep a lot last night. I don't know why. I slept like 5 hours. It was really warm. And then I took like a migraine med at like 4 a.m. because I woke up with a headache. I'm finding that the drier the room is, it's giving me a headache. Anyway, I don't know. I don't know what's happening with me right now. It's been 1 week since you looked at me. It's all right. It's been a bit. I was talking to.
Do you remember the other Bare Naked Ladies song? YouTube just played the other Bare Naked Ladies song to me this week. That it's all been done. Remember that song?
I think so. Yeah. Is that on Shrek? No.
That's left you before the West was won.
They must have been. I will put it on the map and say that. I bet you before they became famous, they must have been such a fucking good like pub band. And people were like, "These guys are gonna be stars."
I'm a believer. They were big in Canada before that, and that's a different band.
Oh,
you're conflating.
Oh no!
And it's completely fair because they were on every soundtrack for like 4 years in the late 90s.
Who are you saying?
Bare Naked Ladies did. It's been 1 week. And it's all been done.
But they're
a big indie pop band in Canada.
Did they also do "Give Me the Run Around"?
Maybe. I don't know that much about the bare.
How you gonna give me the run around?
All I know is that the Bare Naked Ladies are a big indie pop band in Canada, and they've had like two or three hits that cross over. The other band that you're talking about that sang All Star on Shrek, that Smash is Mouth. Fucking Smash Mouth.
Right, and the guy died recently.
Yeah, and they were like a fake punk band.
Right.
Like they were like a ska pop band, but much more a pop band. And then like in the last 5-6 years of their career became like a full-on MAGA.
Yeah.
Like they put their hand up to fucking play at Trump's inauguration. Like that kind of shit.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Blues Traveler was the song I was thinking of.
Blues Traveler, yeah. Right. Well, that's the same era as well. But yeah, they basically sang like catchy upbeat songs that you could put at the beginning of a 90s comedy.
It's like that thing, it's like I feel
while
like
Jim Carrey's driving to work or whatever.
I feel like, yeah, they would have been massive, like bands that in a pub and live would have been amazing, but on, you know, and then all of a sudden they're on the radio and it's like, you know what I mean? Yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah.
I was talking to a friend of the show, Rose Bishop, comedian who's pretty great, and it was interesting because I was just talking about how we've like I feel like I'm a broken record because I'm like I'm always really tired, blah, blah, blah. And she was like it's like she goes I realized like someone had said to her it's like the end of the year, like it's like November and it's like all the accumulation of things throughout the year kind of build up and then you that's why people and I, you know, and that's why we're so tired at this time of the year. And I was like, oh, that's why people have time off over Christmas and New Year's to like recharge and stuff.
Mm.
Right? Because we like, I had like 5 days off in between a job.
We have both worked insecure work basically since we were both 16 years old. We've never had a Christmas holiday.
No, like, never. It's never. Not. And like, even in the last few years working at Big Roads, they were really shit about time off. Like you would put your request for time off in August and then they would sit around and choose who got the days off and who didn't.
I frequently
did not get it because I didn't have kids or whatever. It was such a bullshit thing.
I just gave up because I would in those kind of jobs where it's like you can't take Christmas off. So like I would work in call centers for like courier companies and Christmas they would, which I found out eventually when I became a manager there that it was completely illegal. Allegedly.
Everything's fucking illegal.
They would block out like November and December. And we're like, no one can take leave in those months.
Yeah, what?
You know what I mean? Which I would just lean into and be like, fine, I'm happy to work during Christmas. Like, yes, the week before Christmas sucks, but then the 4 weeks after Christmas, no one bothers us. No one cares. Yeah. So I'd rather work that month and then take fucking, you know, June off when shit's hitting the fan.
Last year, I asked for 1 day off during Christmas, and I think it was like I still work in between Christmas and New Year, and I think I asked for 1 day off, which was like the 23rd of December. 1 day out of all of December, January, 1 day denied because there was other people and they actually were going away. I wasn't going away. 1 day. But now the job I'm at now, which is still for state government, they actually kind of do a close down between Christmas and New Year.
Which is what should happen.
Yeah, so everywhere. I have like 12 days off. My issue with it, though, is that there's 3 days because it actually works out really well because Christmas Day is on a Monday. So it's the fucking best. You got the weekend, the Christmas Day on the Monday, Boxing Day on the Tuesday. So then you got Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Were kids, like this only changed in the 90s.
Hmm.
When we were kids, everything shut down for 2 weeks. Everybody was on holiday for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And it was a much better society and people were much more evenly balanced. Mm. All the shit that people talk about now that like it's some sort of revelatory sort of thing on fucking LinkedIn, like work-life balance and stuff.
No. It's always,
We had that.
We had it. I remember when things opened on Sundays.
And then everybody went, let's jump on this fucking free market capitalism train. And everything's open 24/7. No one gets days off. No one gets holidays.
Mate, they're slowly killing the frog.
We need work-life balance. You're like, well, it existed.
Do you remember when shops weren't open on Sundays?
Yeah.
And I remember when it started.
I would happily go back to that.
And my parents were like, nah. And they were like, no, why should I work on a Sunday? A Sunday.
Yeah.
And it was such a big thing. And it's like, well, and then like everyone's like, well, we'll pay you like double time. And everyone's like, fine. And now places like Chemist Warehouse, they're like, well, we'll pay you normal time on Sundays.
Allegedly,
right? So it's like we're slowly killing, like the frog is slowly dying in the hot water.
It's almost like we're stuck in a fucking system that uses human beings as batteries for the 1% of the wealthiest people on earth.
So let me ask you this, right? There's 3 days between Christmas and New Year at my job where they're like, look, we really just shut down.
Same with my job as well, yeah.
And it's not even a thing where it's like, I mean, we don't even need skeleton stuff because I work in an industry where there is tradesmen.
Hmm.
They all shut down from like the 20th of December to the 20th of January, right?
Yes, which is what everybody should do.
Right. So I'm like, cool. And someone in our meeting to our big, big manager was like, cool. So if we're closing down for those 3 days, they're 3 days paid, yeah? And the manager goes, well, no, that comes out of your annual leave. And she's like, let me talk to the union. I was like, fuck, this bitch is great because it's true. I want to save up my annual leave because we've got a honeymoon next year and I want to save up everything I got. So if I am forced to take 3 days annual leave, I know it's really nice to have like a 12-day break or whatever, but I'd rather work those 3 days instead of being forced to take annual leave.
Yeah.
And if they want to force me, they should pay my annual leave, not out of my annual leave.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes, in an ideal world. I mean, yes, that should happen, but...
Unions!
Like, you get 4 weeks of the year, you know, one of it goes to Christmas. That would just be my thing where it's like, all right, well...
Mind you, the last job I left had seven... I had... When I left Department of Transport, I had 7 weeks annual leave. And I had 4 weeks sick leave, which shows you how good of a worker I was and lost all that sick leave. And got paid out the annual leave, but also never again. I'm taking every sickie because I lost 4 weeks of sick leave because I was like, oh, no, I feel bad. When I left, they barely said goodbye.
Yeah, no.
Barely. Listen,
everyone who's listening to this, I don't care where you work.
Yep.
They don't care about you.
No one cares.
They don't care about you. Nope. They'll never care about you.
Yeah.
Do not give any employer any more than what you're paid to do.
Correct. They don't care. If you
know
left,
your position description inside out. I used to hate the that's not in my job description people. Well, what I realized now is that those people were middle-aged people who had gone through 20 years of bullshit. You know what I mean? And were now like, no, I don't do that. No, I leave at 5. Yeah. No, I don't start until 9. Yeah. Like,
fuck you. They just
I'll take my lunch break. No, I'm not going to I see it at my current workplace, which I'm not going to talk about until I've finished working up there. You can go on my LinkedIn if you really want to and see where it is.
On them.
I'm not going to shit on them. I just like it's because they're pretty good. They're a pretty good employer, which is probably the best that I can say about any employer.
I think they are a pretty good employer, but in every workplace is
but there is
everywhere.
Well, what I was going to say, it's not so much that because some people take their jobs way too seriously.
I just did a little burp in the mic. I don't know if you're going to pick it up in the edit.
It wouldn't be an episode of our podcast if you didn't.
I know.
Yes, there are people who take their jobs way too seriously, and that's just the way it's going to be. But what I do sense, and I've sensed it, you know, I've had 3 jobs in 3 years, and I think there's a real malaise, and I've come to this conclusion this week of I don't think I want to work in an office.
Mm.
And I think you're, taught from a very young age that the pinnacle of success is to have a corner office working for a good company. You know what I mean? Like, it's
correct.
every job that like in my head, I'm an adult learner driver and I'm about to go for my P's. And in my head, I keep thinking I reckon being a courier would be a great job for me.
You don't have to talk to anyone.
I don't have to talk to anyone. I don't have to I would have to speak to the radio room. There would be pressure to deliver everything on time, but that's okay. I can deal with that. But I know that people would look down on me. If I was that's the second thought that comes into my head of I reckon a courier would be a good job. My mum and dad wouldn't be very happy about that if I did that. You know what I mean? There's that attitude of oh, you could have been so much more. And my best mate Lucas said this to me all the time, especially when I was getting sober, because I'd be like, oh, you know, I don't know what I want to do. And, I just want to make sure, I feel like I owe my mom and dad stuff, and I want people to not think of me as a dickhead or wasting my potential. And he's like, dude, as long as you're paying your bills and you're happy doing what you're doing, who gives a shit?
Yeah. Yeah. Right? I mean,
well, I do. It's the way my brain's wired. But I think that's what I'm going to do. I've got a 3-month contract at my current employer, and then I think I'm going to try and find something where I'm just driving. You know what I mean? Like in a solitary yeah. job and stuff. Because like what ends up happening, the reason why I bring this back to an office is whether it's online, and I actually think it's worse online. I think working from home is great for people, but what does tend to happen is that all the bullshit that happens in an office, all the like little microaggressions and passive aggressiveness and stuff is worse in a work from home environment because you can't see people's faces. You can't read people's body language. You can't have those kind of, you know what I mean? So if things, if shit's going down, especially if it's a toxic workplace, I think that toxicity is so much worse in a work from home environment than it is in an office environment.
Like there's so many good people that you can work with, right?
Yeah.
So if you collected all of the great people in your office and then kind of, you know, had the job, which is fine, mundane, boring, shit, whatever, that would be great. But there's just a few elements of like any – the job I have now is fine and it's like there's just one or two elements of like personnel bullshit. Like one person who's a bit of a dickhead, and if they're removed, you know, it's that's the only real kind of the actual job is like it's like fine, and when there's difficulties in the job, that's a job where it's like, you know, you problem solve, you do this, you meet deadlines, you're busy, you're not busy, whatever. That's fine. And there's people that I have to engage with, that's fine. Sometimes I got to talk to stakeholders, that's fine. But it's the actual middle management that I really don't – whenever I need someone, like whenever I need a manager to approve something or fix something or do that, that's what I hate because that's when I have to really engage with people.
The bureaucracy of the organization.
And it's so dumb because there's – like my direct manager is good when I can get hold of them because they're very busy. And they're great. Yeah. And it's the exact kind of manager I want where they there's no bullshit and no drama. But then if they're not available, this other – I got to deal with someone else who is blah.
The job that I enjoyed the most that I had was being the bar manager at Dave and Rob's bar.
Yeah.
That I like it didn't – I mean, they paid well for hospo rates, but they just weren't like – there just wasn't enough hour. I couldn't work full time there. But
you go back to hospitality.
I don't think I could now. But what I did enjoy about it, and I think this is where I like, because I probably shouldn't be using the podcast to go through this thought process. But I want to do something that is might seem basic to society, but at least there's a fucking purpose to it. When I was working at Mr. G's, people were hungry or they wanted to get drunk. Or, have, you know, they're either hungry or thirsty and they came in and we fixed that. And that's it. That's it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm in the process of trying to set up my own online record and bookstore and VHS store. And that's the same thing, right? Like, in principle, someone wants to listen to this record. They want to own it. They come to me. I sell it to them. They now have the record. You know? I feel like the jobs we do, when you try and – like my dad being a fucking project manager for 30 years, he has not been able to explain to me what he does for a job. I it's that kind of work that like completely is unfulfilling for me. You know what I mean? Like every second morning I go to the same bakery down the street from my house and I have the same thought of like, I think I'd enjoy working in here. You know what I mean? Because people are hungry, they need bread, they come in, you sell them the bread, you chat to them about what their day's like, and then they fuck off. And that makes sense. You know what I mean? This person's family needs a loaf of bread, so they come to the bakery, they buy the bread, they leave. You know what I mean? That to me, that makes so much more sense than like, so what do you do? Well, I do I write copy for contracts for an NGO, like, oh, God, I'm already bored halfway through. I got through the first sentence of explaining what my job is and I'm bored. you know.
Can you hear that sound?
Yes.
Is it coming through, you reckon?
Probably.
It's pretty funny. I don't know what she's doing. Willow, what? She's chewing a toy, like a rubber part, and I wonder if I should take it off her because...
Yes, can we just take it off
her? She might swallow something.
Can we take it off her? So, yeah. So, anyway, but me and Stokes are both having existential crises about our workplaces. I'm literally... I've got this three-month contract with this current job, and I'm literally... I'm like a man on death row trying to get out of it. Like, I'm trying to think of any way I can to not go back into another office.
Yeah.
But also...
But sometimes it's good offices, baby. This is the thing.
Where?
I don't know.
You keep saying this to me. For three years we've been together and you keep going, you'll find a job.
An office where you can put on headphones and not talk to anyone.
They don't exist.
I don't know.
They don't exist. You know a job where I can listen to music and podcasts all day and no one bothers me? Courier. Yeah. See, that look and that reaction is the same reaction I would get from everybody else where they're like, oh,
I just think that being stuck in traffic would kill you.
So what? I know.
You don't. You've never been stuck in traffic before as a driver. You don't know.
Do I have to talk to a customer? Do I have to talk to a middle manager boss?
Oh, no.
Do I have to hear? No, I don't. I'm starting to. One of my closest mates, Kieran. Like we growing up together, we both wanted to be artists. He wanted to be like an actual artist and poet. He dabbled in comedy, like played in bands, did a whole bunch of different stuff. And then eventually, and I played in bands the whole time. And then eventually, you get to a point where like you get a missus, and like he got married and stuff, and needed to find a job. And he just started doing scaffolding because it paid well. But he was like, you know what? Because that during that whole time, he worked in retail. And we were talking about it. I'm like, why? Because like, he had been doing it for like 4 years. And I'm like, man, you've been doing scaffolding for ages, dude. Like, what's the deal with that? You like it? He's like, look, it's tough work and I'm fucked by the end of the day. But he's like, what I do enjoy about it, for the most part, you work with good dudes. It's pretty rough, like as far as some of the banter and stuff that goes on. Like there'll be times where you're like, ugh, gross. But for the most part, pretty much everyone's a good person. You work hard, but at the end of the day, you can actually see what you've done and you don't have to deal with customers. Mm. There isn't this weird like office politics and stuff going on. Everyone's got their individual job and you've just got to do it, you know?
Yeah,
and it's like
it.
It's super simple and you get paid really well to do it. And that always stuck in my head of like, that makes sense of like doing something tangible, making something or giving something to somebody. That makes sense. I just don't think like working in a middle management bureaucratic office just, I don't know, it feels like I'm in a Kafka novel.
So I don't know how much people are going to really be interested in this stuff. They probably want to hear us talk about television.
They probably do, but I think people can relate to this conversation.
All right.
We'll see. If we get zero downloads this week, well, then we'll go back to dick and fart jokes next week.
Okay.
All right.
This
is, should we just watch it real quick, the only piece of media in the universe. I am one of your hosts, the Lord Master, Dr. Damien Gibson. And joining
what
me.
What are you and a doctor in?
What am I?
A dickhead.
In fucking being a dickhead. Pop culture.
Nah, Dr. Dickhead.
I have a doctorate in fucking take that and party. And
yay!
And our co-host who keeps interrupting, and I'm just trying to get her fucking name out.
Shut up, idiot.
Is Kelly Big Whoop. Want to fight about it? That's I me. Feel old and tired. I need a holiday for Stuka.
Hey. Now, we have to finish this in at least 30 minutes. So I'm going to keep us on time.
Got a hard out. We're going to look at a wedding venue.
So listen, or maybe even
not for us, for another couple. Yeah. It's kind of weird. But anyway.
So I'm going to keep us rolling. Go.
Okay. Well, we went back to 1998 this week.
Oh, it was the best. I loved it so much.
Watched two documentaries. Netflix has realized after the Michael Jordan documentary, oh, hey, man, we can like fucking earn a shitload of cash by making long form documentaries about interesting celebrities. And we watched two of those this week. One is called Beckham. You guys know this because it's on the cover. And the other is it just called Robbie? Or is it called Robbie Williams?
Stand by. I have it here. Robbie Williams. It doesn't say.
It's I am Robbie Williams, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, I am living for this nostalgia that we've been doing. Well,
which
so
one
good.
Do you want to talk about first?
Okay, so we'll talk about Beckham for 15 minutes. I started watching it and then I stopped because I was like, oh, you might really want to watch this. For someone who doesn't really follow sport, I fucking love sports documentaries. Love them. 30 for 30s, yes, please. Mm. I don't give a fuck what it's about. Like, I am in. So that's why this one, the Beckham one on Netflix, it was so football orientated that I stopped. And then you watched the first episode and you were like, this is great.
Mm.
This is great. And then we watched the second episode because it really is. It's not really about Posh Spice. It's really about him as a – the first episode
it's not about Posh Spice because it's called Beckham.
Yeah, the first episode is – well, I feel like episodes coming up is going to be more of like them.
She's in the documentary because she's his very famous
wife. Yeah, but
wife,
they're about to talk about the affair or alleged affair or whatever. But the first episode is really about him as a kid growing up, getting picked up, Manchester United, blah, 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 meeting Posh Spice, all that sort of stuff. And it was great. I fucking loved it. And until we got to the second episode, which I did fucking love, but the second episode is all about the World Cup issue and the thing with Argentina and the red card and stuff, which I am so fucking mad about. I'm still
furious.
Well,
the end of the first episode showed the red card happening and then the episode two is about the blowback. So David Beckham, if you don't know, David Beckham got a red card in a quarterfinal, I think, against Argentina.
Of his first World Cup, he was 23 years old.
Yeah, in 1998. It was the Argentinians planned to, like, rough Beckham up because he was England's best player. Try and, like, this happens all the time in sport where if there's a superstar player, the opposition will do everything in their power, legal or illegal, to try and put them off their game.
Fuck with them, yeah.
And it was it was great. They interviewed the fullback from, I can't remember his name, but the Argentinian fullback who like played the pantomime villain perfectly.
Yeah.
Like he knew exactly what this documentary wanted from him, and he's like, he's winking at the camera and smiling and stuff. Like he knew exactly.
Yeah.
Like he knows who he is in the history of English football. Yeah, like
he fucked with Beckham.
But what's insane to me about that is that like the documentary like points out very, very bluntly that, like, listen, at the time, Beckham was, like, all over the papers. You know, he was the one guy who ruined the World Cup for England, even though Glenn Hoddle, the manager, wouldn't play Beckham earlier.
This episode really plays on the fact that Beckham lost the – it was a quarterfinal, wasn't the grand final. Lost the whole World Cup, one 23-year-old kid. Lost the World Cup.
They just completely scapegoated him. Even though the red card decision was wrong. Like objectively wrong. Like it was such a little love tap. Beckham should have got a yellow card.
If that.
It should have been a yellow card if that, right? And then like Fleet Street just went to town on him.
Like,
but there were other people involved as well. You know who comes across as a real fucking dickhead in this documentary so far? Is the guy got paid like 30. The fucking fullback for Man U, who's meant to be his best. He was his best man in his way. Yeah, Gary Neville.
Yeah.
Just comes across as a real worm.
Mm.
Like, so he, like, there's. Because they were talking. The whole narrative in the English press during that World Cup was that Beckham's mind was off the game because he had gone to New York to see Posh before the World Cup. Like, he dared to go and see.
He was in this high-profile relationship, and so they sidelined him for a few.
They kept playing him off the bench,
basically as a punishment for having a relationship. I think.
Well, yeah, it was just that typical bloke shit of like
bullshit,
bros before hoes, man. Like, and Neville's like on record. Like, he comes out in a press conference and basically says, "Oh, David's mind's been off the job, and he needs to get it on the job," and blah 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 blah. And so those comments, like, incited this reaction because when the red card happened, the coach and captain of the side, I don't know if Neville was captain, but I know he ended up being captain of England at some point, I think, or he's definitely captain of Man U. Anyway, a senior player in the team is saying to the English public, like, this guy's not trying.
It's rubbish.
He cares more about his wife than he does about the English football team.
And so
when it happens, there's a whole country that want to kill him. And Neville had a hand in that. Like, Glenn Hoddle obviously had a hand in that, but fucking Gary Neville did too. And then it keeps cutting to him in the present day going, it was awful what they did to him. It was awful. You were the fucking...
You guys didn't stand out. Like
you didn't stand up for him at any point.
Where
whatsoever.
Were the press conferences with the rest of Man U going, it wasn't Beckham, it was all of us. We all lost it.
You mean England.
England, sorry. Sorry, England. Like, you've got a team of people who could have pulled the team together and won the match.
Yeah.
You could have been winning before he got sent off.
Good manager, and obviously Glenn Hoddle had some sort of like inferiority complex with David Beckham.
Dude, they were
but
not.
Like,
yeah.
A good manager would have come out immediately after that game and said, look, I think it was a ridiculous decision and it had a serious effect on whether we could win the game tonight or not.
He honestly, in a post-match interview, said, well, you know, he definitely...
He cost it for us. He literally said he cost the game for us. And so
Fuck off.
And what's interesting, like, and I know we're not talking about Robbie yet, but I just think the parallel between the two documentaries are very interesting because this is an interesting story. This is a pretty basic guy who's had a very interesting story, whereas Robbie obviously has an interesting story, but, like, it's more of a sort of formulaic rock star story, but he's a very interesting guy. And it's, like... Do you know what I mean? Like, because Bex is a pretty normal dude. Like, even like in the interviews for this documentary, he's like, "I just wanted to play football."
He's
and
just
I just
a really nice. Sweet
I just
guy.
Love Victoria.
He's not.
You know, I just wanted to see her.
He's not a ball buster. Oh. Yeah, he's not. He's not like a. He's not a smart ass. He's not trying to be the best guy in the room. Like, he's not trying to be. He's just like, I love my wife. I love my kids, and I've got bees. You know,
I just love Victoria. I look after my bees. I love Victoria. Yeah. I don't really love football
love
anymore.
Love my family. Yeah, he's really like football's it really hurting.
I mean, these documentaries, look, we're not fucking idiots. We understand these documentaries are produced by the people who are in them.
It's $20 million they got paid for it.
To make them look good, right?
$20 million.
Mate, fuck, get paid.
Yeah.
Fucking take Netflix. Take all of Netflix's money. Fuck Netflix.
Yeah, fuck them.
People don't forget, man. Solidarity with the Writers and Actors Union.
Oh,
anyway,
they made a deal. Fran
Drescher
did it.
I know, but that still doesn't.
She was working.
Fran Drescher did it.
Good parallel between the two of them because they both got very famous at a very young age and had a very, very quick rise to stardom and then had some pretty significant, like, downs.
What's interesting to me in these. Documentaries, and I'll be interested to see if you think the same thing, is who comes across well and who comes across not so well. Yeah. Already Gary Neville doesn't come across well to me at all. Like, just the whole documentary, I'm like, fuck off, cunt. The two people who I thought I might be like, I don't like you, who have actually come across pretty well is Posh. Like,
she seems really fun.
Surprise, surprise, not a big Spice Girls fan, so I don't really know anything about her. But she just, again, she comes across as just a normal person, and she's really, like...
Down to earth.
Fiery. Yeah, but I like how much solidarity she has with David. You know, like, she's like, to this day, like, I would still kill the people who were chanting.
Who was
like,
Hoddle? Is that his name, Hoddle?
Yeah, Glenn Hoddle.
She's like, yeah.
So she comes across really well. Alex Ferguson actually comes across all right, even though, like, all the stories about him, the manager of Man U, the old Scottish guy, the stories about him are not great. That, like, and I think we're about to see in the third episode the deterioration in the relationship between Bex and Fergie, but so far he comes across pretty well. But yeah, Glenn Hoddle and fucking Gary Neville do not come across well as well. Rio Ferdinand, a former fullback for Man U, who I always hated when I was watching the Premier League back in the day, good dude. Solskjaer, the Dutch guy.
Oh, I like him.
He comes across as a good dude as well.
Yeah, he came across as good.
Yeah, so yeah, it's really interesting to like.
I did like Victoria Beckham when, because she was like, it's awful. some of the stuff going on. Mm. And look, with fame comes a price, you know, nothing's free. But it just seems like, you know, she would go to matches and just watch him, you know. Like, she didn't need to build up her status more. She was a fucking Spice Girl. Mm. And she just had a baby. She's just sitting in the thing, you know, watching the match with sunglasses on, and the whole crowd is chanting, Posh Spice takes it up the ass.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, and just the way that she's explaining it, where you go, oh, yeah, that is so awful.
And that chant's factually wrong because she just had a baby, so she obviously doesn't.
No, she yeah.
She obviously takes in the jutes, mate.
So, and then she had a cesarean. That baby was a cesarean because the baby and her were in trouble. And then people were, like, giving her shit about it. Like, oh, couldn't, you know.
Yeah.
Like, what's wrong? Like, I'm awful. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you
the
people?
The one thing that you notice with both of these documentaries is that being a celebrity in Britain
awful.
Is fucking brutal.
Awful.
Like, I would say worse than in the States or Australia. It just seems like it is an absolute fucking gauntlet that you have to run. It makes absolute sense to me that eventually David and Victoria just moved to America and have never come back.
I was just about to say that, because then he ends up going to Spain and then went to LA.
Hmm.
Of course he went to LA. Of course he did.
Yeah.
Because, and I remember, like, reading interviews with him going, oh, I'm left alone. It's the best. Like, but not even just left alone, like, they're getting into a car from, like, a doctor's surgery.
Hmm.
And people are like, you're a disgrace, you're pathetic. Like, people are, and I think there's a point in the doco where they're like, look, if you want to take our photo, like, I think Beckham says it, where he's like, I understand. If you want to take my photo and I'm walking around, I get it. I understand. But when I'm walking around with my kids or get into a car and you're like, you're a piece of shit, your wife fucking sucks, your wife takes it up the ass. When you've got photographers actually saying that stuff to people to get, which is what they do to get a rise out of you and stuff. Like they interview two photographers, two brothers, and they're, like, taking photos of them in, like, really intimate times. And they say, do you feel bad about that? And they're like, oh, looking back, yeah, I think I feel bad about it, looking back. I'm like, you absolute savages. And that's why, you know, the Bjork, remember the footage of Bjork where she went crazy at a That's because a photographer said something. And then she, like, got charged with, like, assault or something from a photographer. But it's because the photographer said something about her fucking son.
Yeah, or Russell Crowe throwing a mobile phone at one of them.
Yes.
Or fucking, I mean, there's so many different
examples.
They do it
on purpose, but yeah, I do like the Billy Connolly. I think it's Billy Connolly, where when photographers take photos of him, he the way he walks, because they're walking backwards, so he walks in a way that they're, like, following him or, you know, leading him, but he walks in a way that makes them, like, fall off a step or, like, fall or, like, crash into a bin. And there's all this – there's footage. We should Google later. There's – should we just watch it real quick? There's footage of him doing it with photographers where he just, like – he's like, oh, yeah, and engages with them, and then they fall off a step. And so it's really funny because they're walking backwards. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, Billy's
but, yeah, like, this – it was – it's horrific. And they just seem like two really sweet and lovely people who weren't – like, there's definitely people who, like, engage with the press. And, you know, I know there's stories of Madonna where she has planted press and stuff and photographers, whatever. I don't know. Maybe they did it. Maybe they're full of shit. But they just seem like two people who are like –
I don't think so.
No, yeah, they really don't.
I don't think
don't.
So. I think it was a perfect storm.
It was so, like, easy to hate
everybody
them.
Knows who Posh and Bex are because, like – he was the superstar of the Premier League. She was in the Spice Girls. Spice Girls were the Beatles at that time.
Yeah.
It was a fucking – it was a perfect storm, you know. And, like – it's
so
like,
sad.
All the stories about, like, watching the footage of him, like, playing game after game after game as he's getting booed out of the building.
Booed. Like, and still getting a goal. Just like, still alley-ooping goal, the goals. Like, he's just playing.
Crossing, baby. He's just alley-ooping the goals.
He's just like,
it's
like
very cute.
Crushing it. And then there's a point where Posh was like, he was in such a bad depression.
Hmm.
And no one ever asked if he was okay. No one offered counselling. Like,
it's
his depression.
A very strong dude mentally.
Yeah, I think strong is like he shut everything out. Like, just staunch working class, shut it all out. Like,
but that is, there does take a certain, there is a certain strength to be able to do that, because I wouldn't be able to do that.
The press had bugged his mum and dad's landline.
Yeah, it's fucked. It's completely fucked.
Why?
It made me, oh, just in case they get a story.
Mum, I mean, and, like, awful. Well, that's why awful.
Hugh Grant and all those guys,
yeah,
like, sued the Murdoch press for, there was a bunch of, but yeah. Hugh Grant was, like, the face of it.
What was the big story where the son had tapped someone's phone? And that's why when
it was a girl had been murdered and they tapped the parents' phones.
Wasn't there another one where it was a celebrity? Because is the Sun over now? No,
the Sun still exists.
Still going, but I thought a magazine,
there were
News of the World?
News of the World got shut down because of...
Yeah. Right, because I thought that they tapped someone famous's phone.
They did, yes, they did. Hugh Grant was one of them and there was a few other people, but the thing that shut them down completely was that it came out that there was like a six-year-old girl who got murdered and they had tapped the parents' phones because they wanted to see if they had done it or whatever.
Jeez.
But anyway, getting back to the Bex documentary, it will, if you're a sports person like I am, it will make you rethink. I mean, there's been a lot of moments over the last 10 years where I've been like, should I still be watching sport? I don't, like, I love it, but there's so many things about it that like just make me feel icky. Icky, what a childish word. But a word. But this was another one where it's like you just see the vitriol and the aggressiveness towards Beckham from the opposition fans who like would have been cheering him. And like, again, eventually when he plays for England again, will be cheering him, you know. And just like, I don't know, there's this
Well, hello.
There's like this selfishness from like sports fans and supporters where it's like I hear it like when I listen to people talk about Aussie rules where they're like, I paid my money, I can say what I like. I'm like, I think we need to get past that. Like, you can boo an opposition team, you know, you can, but like, the boy was, he was a boy, he's 22 years old. He got sent off because of a poor umpiring decision. Not one person talks about the ref either, by the way.
Not one person says that was a terrible decision.
Even still in the documentary now, no one says like, disgusting. Oh, it was a pretty bad decision.
Disgusting.
The Argentinian fullback kind of goes like, oh, it was a bit of a soft decision. It's like, it was the incorrect decision. Maybe the worst decision in World Cup history.
He's fine. The umpire's fine. What's his name? No one knows his name.
Yeah.
Like and as someone who doesn't watch soccer and knows it's a non-contact sport, blah, 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 some of the things that people had done to Beckham, there was one where someone knocked into him and he fell on his head. Like, he must have been concussed. Like, I don't know how he – and in this one here, he was lying on his stomach. He got tripped over really poorly, lying on his stomach, and he just, like kicked his leg back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and it just hit the other guy, and the other guy, dude, disgusting. That should not have been that.
The flopping and diving around in football is one of the reasons why I find it very difficult to watch. But yeah, this documentary is really well done. There are little like filmic techniques, like I'm not even sure how they do it, but they've got an extreme close up on like Beck's face when he's watching certain things, and you can see little micro changes in his expressions and stuff. That's super cool. It's well done.
Yeah.
It's well produced. It's well shot. The interviews are fantastic. Like, a lot of love and care has been put into this.
He's so handsome. He really, yeah. Beautiful.
Yes, and he is handsome, so if that's something that's bringing you to the... I mean, he's
definitely had some fillers in his lips, which is fine. He's had his teeth done. I reckon his hair has had a bit of a zhuzh.
Okay.
And the fashion, dude, how good is, like, when they get married, like, he's wearing this, like, big leather jacket, like, oversized.
He's got a purple suit on get married.
Oh, sorry, when they announce their engagement.
Right.
And she's got this like high turtleneck and dude, the purple suit.
Well, that was the fashion. Like, that was their fashion at the time.
Fun.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting to go back and watch that. And for someone like me who wasn't has never really been into celebrity culture like that, it's interesting to see the other side of it. And I just think like I'd rather be dirt poor, I think.
Mm.
For a long time when I was playing in bands, I wanted to be as big as Oasis. Like, I wanted to be the Beatles. And I'm like, I don't think I would have – I wouldn't have been able to put up with that. I would have fucking hit a journalist or a photographer or – you know what I mean? Mm. Like, I would have been in deep trouble. I would have been screaming at people. I would not have been able to handle that at all. So, but it's a really interesting documentary. If you've got everything we watch at the moment is on Netflix, which is weird. But if you've got Netflix, it's on there. Check it out.
Baby, we might have to leave soon. We might have to talk about Robbie next week.
No, come on. We do two shows.
No, we've done one a few times. We did one for the rap parties.
Yeah, but that's the point of the rap parties is that we give a whole episode to one show.
Okay.
We can talk about Robbie real quick because we only watched one episode of it.
It's the fucking best.
It's
and
awesome.
I love it because I was in love with Take That. And what was so funny is that Damien's watching it because he loves Robbie Williams. I do love Robbie Williams.
Because
I love Take That. And as I'm watching it, I'm like talking the whole time because I'm like, that's right, this happened. And then they showed this like Glastonbury thing. I'm like, yep, this is the Glastonbury where he got fired afterwards because he'd been hanging out with the Gallaghers and they didn't like it. Like, did I surprise you with how much I knew about stuff because of my Take That?
No, it didn't surprise me because I know that you love Take That.
But it was just like the way that everything I don't know where this dog is going to go because so far it's just him in his bed in his underwear watching videos and I don't think that
it's more interesting than that. That makes it sound like it's
I don't know. We're gonna watch a few more episodes just find out what's kind of how the tone's going to be.
This might hook you a little bit more. There has been, basically from the moment that he was in Take That, he has been filmed. So there is 3,000 hours worth of
film. I know,
film.
I read that part.
I'm telling the listeners.
Oh, right, okay. The way you were saying it. Baby, go get some water. Jesus, have some water. Come on.
Mate, you burp into the mic every 5 seconds.
Yeah, but it's annoying. People are going to be like.
I'm going to cut it out. I'm going to cut it out. Fuck.
Are ya?
Yes.
Okay.
Anyway, there's been 3,000 hours of back, like his life has been, every moment of his life has been filmed. And so in the first episode of this documentary, like for example, you see him asking Nicole Appleton to marry him.
Mm.
You see him and Guy Chambers writing the second album in the Caribbean, like everything. You see like arguments between the members of Take That, everything. Like it's beyond intimate. It's insane. It's like Truman Show levels of like
who thinks to film this stuff?
Well, like he's been he got famous. I mean, Take That were obviously being filmed all the time anyway. And then I don't know, I suppose they decided that they were going to record his life for the first album and then they did it for the second album and they've just kept doing it. But also, I mean, like, he's a super famous guy, so, like, you know, they continue to record his life.
Well, it's pretty amazing because just reconnecting with my Take That time, which I very much loved, but I think I want to wait for a few more episodes because I don't know how the tone's going to be. He seems like a really fun guy and he has a lot of inner demons, but my issue is that when he left Take That, and I know we disagree, when he left Take That, he didn't have very nice things to say about those members.
Yeah, because they were cunts.
Right? Him and Mark were very close and, you know, it goes on that, yes, there was – the thing with Gary, though, was that they were in competition with each other, right? So he was a cunt to Gary as well and Gary is a cunt to him. However, him and Jason Orange –
Gary was also 5 years older than Robbie, so
– Correct, you know. Right? So both people are at fault. Right? One should know better, but they're both at fault. Anyway.
I don't know. If an adult and a child are arguing, I think
so. Robbie Williams is absolutely done nothing wrong.
No, but he's 16 years old.
So I've said that. That's fine.
And Gary Barlow's 21.
Yeah,
so,
I've said that. They're both in the wrong.
You're a fucking adult and you're treating a child like shit because you want to be more famous than him.
Yes,
like, it's a pretty fucking insidious way to be.
Right. So they're both still in the wrong, okay? So yes, Gary should know better, okay. but they're both in the wrong, but Robbie, like Gary never said anything after they broke up. He never said any – all the stuff that happened, Gary never said shit. But Robbie like fucking smashed them around town.
He was hurt, and he outdid them.
Right.
Massively.
But it's Jason Orange and Robbie definitely had arguments. Like, they did not get along. And that's kind of – that's been proven about blah, blah, blah. But still to this day, Gary hasn't said a bad thing. And I just hope that Robbie really acknowledges that, you know, he did say it very briefly in one part in the doco that, you know, his daughter goes, "Why did you say those things or something?" And Robbie goes, "Because I was jealous, you know, I was mad at him and I was jealous." Because that's theirs was a frenemy issue. It was jealousy because they both wanted to be George Michael. And then Robbie ended up being George Michael, you know?
It's insane to me that anyone looked to take that and didn't go, "Oh, who's that?"
Because Gary Barlow won.
Watching that stuff, it's like there's the fat little blonde one, three other dudes, and who's that megastar on the left there?
It's because Gary Barlow was the songwriter, he won when he was 16 years old. He wrote a million love songs. He won what's the songwriting award? Terra Novella, you know.
The iVella Award.
Yeah. So he won one of those when he was like 16.
Hmm.
So Gary Barlow was a musical savant. He was this, and at the time they didn't know how to make him a star on his own. So they put him in this fucking boy band, which he shouldn't have been in. He didn't know how to dance. He was overweight. Play the piano, you know what I mean? So it was fucked on Gary as well, because he was forced, like, you can only be a star if you do this. Everyone had a bad time, right? And I'm not dismissing it. I just hope that Robbie was really mean about a lot of the stuff he said about Gary, and I just hope that he really reflects about it.
Mate, 14-year-old Kelly.
I know.
Loves Gary Barlow so much. Anyway, the documentary is awesome. I'm a big indie rock, alternative rock guy.
Oh, yeah.
Punk music. You know, that's the kind of music I love. For some reason, I adore Robbie Williams. He's like the one pop guy that I really get into, and I just love him. So, yeah. Like, for me, watching this documentary, he's just so fucking charming. You can't, and I think it's because he's completely open at all times about, you know, sometimes he'll be super arrogant, but then in the next minute he'll be like, "Yeah, but I'm a piece of shit and you shouldn't like me." Mm. And I really identify with that as a personality trait. And I just think it's very real. And I don't know.
So many demons.
And I think there was a real underdog thing with Robbie after Take That. It felt like he kind of got cast to one side.
He did.
And he built himself back up again. And I really love that kind of rags to riches story as well. And so
he really did.
Even when he's having a go at Gary Barlow, he's still only 23 years old.
Yeah, I know.
When you say dumb shit and you're upset and you're hurt, those guys ended up making friends again. Take That did another tour and a new album. Like, they did an album together. Everyone's fine now. But yeah, some things were said at the time that would have hurt. And you're a big fan, I'm sure it would have. Like, when I see, to this day, when I see things like where one of the Beatles has said something nasty about
Adorable.
One of the other ones, I don't like it. Even though the comment was made 50 years ago, I'll still be like, "Oh, I don't like George slagging off John. That's awful."
Yeah, I don't like it, but it's amazing when, like, showing that Glastonbury where he does Angels. Everyone knows it. Like, I mean, I think you know, but I don't know how much. I don't think people realize at the time, in the 90s, the battle between grunge and pop was massive. I liked Take That, and I lived in Werribee where grunge was very big, right? Where it was like Silverchair, and it was so fucking hard for someone like Robbie, who was a pop thing. Because I remember people used to always say, and I just looking back, it's so awful. Like, people would be like, I'd be like, "Oh, I like Take That." And they're like, "You know, they're gay. They're all gay." I'm like, I remember at the time going,
"No, they're not."
Right. Number one, I remember at the time going, "No, they're not." And number two going, "So what if they were?"
Well,
you know, the homophobia of the 90s where it's like, "Oh, they're gay. I remember just thinking, "Mate, so what? I like their songs. Like, I love their dancing. Like, I loved them."
Just that, like, absolute fear of, like, you loving something, but, like, the fear of someone absolutely shitting all over it. At high school, like, it was just
I hated it, and worst. Especially in that environment in the West where it was like, if you didn't like fucking Pearl Jam and Silverchair. And if you didn't like grunge, you were a piece of shit. Like, I would not have friends. Like, it was a, like, I would have to hide it because people wouldn't want to be friends with me.
Dude,
if I like
pop
music.
I remember getting into, like, Blur and Oasis and Pulp around the same time, like, 94. So I was in, like, year 8, year 9.
Mm.
And I got the same thing from my mates at high school. Yeah. Not the ones I'm still friends with, but other people at high school who were into Soundgarden and fucking Pantera and
so
shit.
Rough.
Where they'd be like, oh, that's fucking gay.
I hate like, it. It's so awful.
Like,
it's so awful.
One, who cares?
Yeah.
But listen, Jarvis Cocker is fucking every single woman in England. Like,
it's so unfair.
Like, it was just done. Anyway, like, and it makes you feel awful.
Anyway, it was a big, big deal for Robbie to play that festival because that was the crossover of from being some shitty, you know, in inverted commas, gay pop star to like, oh, fuck, okay. But that's when also I think the reason why at that time people hated pop, but then all of a sudden I feel like with that song, all the people singing it who were fans of grunge and stuff, it was like, okay, grunge was starting to go. Like the whole being that elitist, like you can only like grunge. Grunge is the only music. That's it. Boo. I feel like there was a crossover where people started going, oh, hang on. I love Pantera, but I do like Angels. It's pretty cool.
I think it was just because, like I was saying last night, he co-wrote his own songs with Guy Chambers, who was in proper bands in the 80s and stuff.
Mm.
And so I think, you know, an educated audience, like the Glasgow audience, were like, oh, I've got no problem with him. These songs are good. He's an underdog. He can sing well. He's entertaining. Like, you know, there's like Tom Jones is fucking brilliant. You know what I mean? Elvis Presley is brilliant. Like, you can like people who aren't necessarily like singer-songwriters and still have music, like, and they can still have credibility. I think maybe Robbie has lost that over time a little bit with some records that aren't as good, but that happens to everyone.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's great. If you've got any interest in Take That or Robbie Williams or even just pop music or music in general, it is
cute.
A really good, interesting documentary. Even if you don't know anything about Robbie besides the fact that, you know, Robbie Williams is a famous guy, it's a really interesting, like,
it's
you'll immediately be drawn in by him. Because he's just a fucking never-ending well of charisma.
It's pretty fun.
Yeah. I'm going to give Beckham 4 grumps and I'm going to give Robbie also 4 grumps.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like I'm in the same area because...
Well, I am Robbie Williams.
I think, you know what, I'm going to give Beckham 4 grumps because I really like it and I can't wait to see the stuff at this the supposed alleged affair. Robbie, I'm going to give 3 only because I feel like they've just done a documentary where they've like – because there's more work has gone into Beckham. Shut up. More work has gone into Beckham.
He said nasty things about Gary Barlow, so 2 grumps.
No. Basically, the Beckham one, it's like they've got all these interviews with different people and then with the Robbie one, they've just – got him in his underwear talking to camera watching videos and then showing footage. Like, I don't feel like the production value is very good.
I think the production value is great on the Robbie Williams.
Okay, well,
as
we agree to disagree.
Yeah. Anyway, we got to go look at a wedding venue.
All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks for listening. A huge leap in listenership this week, which is amazing. Thank you.
Tell your friends.
So, yeah, keep telling your friends.
Love you.
Follow us on socials. We love you a lot.
Okay, I love you.
Love you. Bye.